Okay. House Committee on Revenue for March 17, 2009 will come to order. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 394. Day?
Chair Brunhart, members of the committee.
Sorry, I said House Bill. I meant Senate Bill 394.
Chair Brunhart, members of the committee. There are instances where collections of property taxes are made prior to extension on the tax roll. Instances include severance or removal of improvements from the land and disqualification from special assessment that occurred during a certain time of the year. Whereas Chapter 311-370 states rules for refunds of excess collections and cancellations of deficiencies when property taxes on certain properties are collected by law before the extension on the tax roll. The current law requires that overpaid taxes, in this case, be refunded if excess payment is $5 or more. However, sections in ORS Chapter 311 related to refunds in general state that mandatory minimum refund applies only to overpayment of more than $10. So what this bill does is to be consistent with other property tax refund process. So this bill changes mandatory minimum refund of overpaid property taxes to more than $10 and stipulates that tax collector cancel uncollected deficient property taxes of $10 or less when property taxes are collected in advance of extension on the tax roll. It takes effect on the 91st day after adjournment sine die.
Okay.
And you have revenue impact statement and fiscal impact statement.
Oh, you're ready for us to work this today. All right. If we just had a committee. But we do have enough for hearing, so let's hear. Who wants to be heard? Yes, ma'am. Please come forward.
Can you do it? Okay, I have six.
Yes, six.
Good morning, Chair Brunhart, committee members. For the record, my name is Diane Belt, and I represent the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. And today, our first bill we have before you is Senate Bill 394. And as Day indicated, this is kind of dealing with pre-collection of taxes. And to give you a little bit of history, there are certain instances in which the county does collect taxes in advance. If you have a manufactured home that's moving, say, from Washington County to Yamhill County before the taxes become due, they are taxable in our county, so we're going to want to collect those before they go. So we do an estimate of tax. If you have a farm or timber deferral that you disqualify, you can also pay that in advance of the tax roll. If property is being combined during the tax year, we would also require that tax be paid in advance before the combination is done. So this all requires an estimate. Once the tax roll is determined, those funds that were collected in advance are applied to the various accounts, and in most cases, it's going to create a refund. In some cases, it does create a small balance. In the 1991 session, we came to the legislature and we asked for a bill to put an amount of $10 or less on which we would make a refund. And basically, the cost of doing a refund at that time, we calculated, was about $35. I think at the time we asked for 20, but I think we decided on 10. And to be honest, as a taxpayer, if I had a refund of more than $10, I think I'd want that back. And at any time, if a taxpayer comes in and does request the refund, even if it's $3, we will issue that refund. So it's permissive. And at the time, I don't know why we didn't address pre-collections as well, so that we had some consistency. So that's what this bill would do, is it would bring into compliance with our other refund statute, in that if there is an overpayment of $10 or less, we would not make the refund. And what it also does is it, if there's a deficiency of $5, currently we don't, we cancel that tax. What this bill would do would also increase that to a deficiency of $10 or less, and we would cancel the tax. And when you look, I kind of gave you a little spreadsheet of what information I got from some of the counties, and it's a very small number. We don't do a whole lot of pre-collections, and most of the time, if there is a refund, it's typically a lot more than $10 because we want to be sure we collect enough to satisfy the debt, especially if something is leaving our county. So it's a pretty small revenue impact, and as far as fiscal, we already do it, so there really isn't much of a fiscal. So that is Senate Bill 394, and I'd sure take any questions.
Yes, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So looking at the second adjustment, that is if the deficiency is $10 or less, you don't expect a wave of people paying $10 less than what they're supposed to. Am I saying that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, if there is a balance due of $10 or less after we apply the payment, we would cancel that. We also do that on regular payments. There's an amount where it just isn't, it's not cost-effective to bill. Statute already allows us to cancel deficiencies on what I call a regular tax payment. These are dealing with tax payments that we collected in advance.
So,
please, yeah.
So the percentage of folks that pay in advance that would want to pay less than $10 is extraordinarily small. Not that anybody would want to, but I'm just saying this would give you license to pay exactly $10 less, and I wouldn't have to worry about someone coming after me if I paid in advance.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, it's an estimate that we, when we ask you for that payment, we're estimating the tax. And there's not very many cases when you're going to be allowed to pay it in advance, only about four, because we don't collect taxes in advance. We don't have a way to escrow those payments. We don't have a way to keep track. So a lot of people always contact us and say, gee, I just came into an awful lot of money because of inheritance. Can I pay my property taxes 4 years in advance? And the answer is no. But if you meet certain criteria, like if you have a manufactured home that's leaving our county, if you're doing a plat and it's after July 1st, we would estimate a tax and collect it. So we're talking about a very small group of people. In Washington County, out of like 200,000 accounts, I think last year we pre-collected on about 180. But now that development has really gone down, I'm sure that will go down as well.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 394? I don't see anyone. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 394 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 395.
Mr. Chair, can, that's right, Dave. You get to go
Dave,
first.
You
I'm
go
sorry.
First.
I'm excited.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. ORS 311.615 states that notice of warrants to enforce payments of taxes on personal property can be given by four consecutive weekly publications in a newspaper of general circulation in the county. What this bill does is to change that. Senate Bill 395 allows counties to serve notice of required personal property tax delinquency warrants by means of one publication in a newspaper of general circulation in the county and by first-class mail to persons named in notice, replacing the current method of notice, one method of notice, that uses four consecutive weekly publications in the newspaper of general circulation in the county. At the same time, this bill increases fee for service of personal property tax delinquency warrant from $15 to $20. The current service fee for personal property tax delinquency warrant is $15. The $15 fee has not been changed since 1983. The statewide number of served warrants is estimated to be a little over close to 17,000 for fiscal year 2007 to 2008. And
thank you.
Now it's my turn. Good morning, Chair Barnhart and committee members. Once again, for the record, my name is Diane Belt, and I'm representing the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. And as they indicated, what this bill is dealing with is personal property taxes. Personal property taxes are a little different than real property taxes in that it is a personal debt of the owner of the property as well as a lien against the equipment. So when we talk about personal property, we are talking about personal property manufactured homes, which would be homes that are located in a park. We're talking about business personal property where the taxpayer is required to file a return once a year with the county to declare their property, goes through depreciation schedule, a bill is sent then in October, and collection is collected at the same time, and taxes are calculated in the same manner as real property. The difference with personal property is that by statute, after the first third is past due, then the entire amount of tax is considered delinquent, and we are required by statute to issue a warrant or a judgment against that personal property. There is three ways in which to serve that warrant. One is by certified mail. Two is by publication in a local paper. Currently, the statute states that you have to do four consecutive publications, or you can do personal service, either the sheriff's department or as tax collector, you could personally serve that warrant. All the years I've been in collections, I can only think of one time that one county used the publication process, mainly because it's cost prohibitive to do so. So most of the counties actually send these warrants by certified mail. What this bill would do would bring kind of into line the publication requirements that we have with the real property publication requirements, which in Chapter 312 we're only required to publish real property foreclosures one time in a local paper. And what we'd like to do with this bill is to bring into line the same requirement, other than we would send one first-class mail and publish once in the local paper. It would be a little more cost effective if we're able to just publish once. Sometimes we do have difficulty locating property owners, and this would be a good way to get the word out that we have some people out there that haven't paid their personal property taxes and perhaps locate them to try to collect. The other thing that we would like, that we hope this bill would do, is increase our service from $15 to $20. As Dave said, the last time that we asked for an increase was in 1983. And at that time, and it took me a while to find the post office rates, was $1.65 to send a certified mail. It's now $5.32, and those rates are going up again. And statewide, the average to process a warrant is $18.53. So we kind of feel like it's time to probably raise that fee to cover our costs. So that's what Senate Bill 395 does, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Representative Riley, and then Representative Berger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm just a little concerned about changing from certified mail to first-class mail, because I know sometimes first-class mail, you don't know it got there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, we're not making a change that way. You still will have three methods: certified mail. If you choose to publish in the newspaper, you would publish plus send a regular mail.
Okay.
So you're still publishing, but we're adding, because that in current statute, all you have to do is publish four consecutive times. But we would be adding the regular mail, first class mail.
Follow up, please.
Yes, please.
So is there anything that happens prior to this? I mean, is there notification along the way before this happens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, yes. 30 days after the tax becomes delinquent, the tax collector can issue the warrant. Prior to that date, we're required to send what we call a notice of intent to warrant or a delinquent notice. So the taxpayer receives notice prior to the judgment going out, explaining what's going to happen and also outlining the fees, additional fees that would be charged. So it's not a surprise.
And how is that sent?
It is sent by first-class mail.
Representative Berger?
Yeah, I have questions along the same line. You, if you'll indulge me,
yes, please.
Mr. Chair,
yep.
You stated that the two kind of types of personal property involved here are usually business property that's taxable and mobile homes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, correct.
I think the mobile home thing strikes a chord with us. It does with me. If folks are faced with losing their homes and they need a lot of notification. And I guess what you're saying is that in the past on this, there was no newspaper notification.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, no. You have three options to issue it. And you could publish in the paper, but it was four consecutive publications, which the counties could not afford to take advantage of.
Okay, so this is to bring that down to one.
Correct.
So you could do just that.
Yes.
And nothing more.
Correct.
Or you could send them a letter.
A certified letter. Or you can personally.
I'm not sure where it says certified, because the bill I'm reading says first class mail.
Is that a different section of statute?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, what we're doing with the public, we have three options to serve that warrant. Right now, all 36 counties use certified mail because we can't afford any other method of service. So what this bill is attempting to do is to open up the door or the avenue to use publication to make it more cost-effective. So what we're asking is, currently, you can publish it four times with. All you have to do is send out the notice of intent. Then you could publish four consecutive times in a local paper. But what we're asking for is this one particular option for service publication is that we reduce it to one publication, and we're going to throw in or add a first-class notice as well.
Mr. Chair, can I
please
pursue this?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So your other method is to send the sheriff.
That's correct.
Okay. So in reality, what you do, never mind statute, you can't afford the four publications, so you
right.
don't publish.
Correct.
You send a certified letter a month or so ahead, and if no response, then the sheriff goes
no.
or...
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, when we put the certified mail over to the post office, that's served, the warrant's recorded, and then we're done with the process.
Right. Let me just interrupt for a second
yeah.
here, Representative Berger, if I may. The statute we do not have in front of us is ORS 311.620, service of warrant. And here's what the statute says. If it is deemed expedient to do so, notice may be given either by service of any warrant in the same manner as summons is served in the act in an action at law, or by service of the warrant by certified mail, return receipt requested. Now, so that's what she's talking about right now. And then it goes on to say, notice by personal service or by certified mail shall be in lieu of service by publication as to the person so served. It shall not be necessary to include in the publication of the notice the names of such persons or the descriptions or other matters relating to their respective property. So I think that's exactly what you're saying, and you're referring to the statute that's not in the bill. So that's why I read it for the committee. You're actually describing ORS 311.620, and we're working on 311.615, if I've got that right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Does that answer your question?
Well, it does.
Please go ahead.
But I guess what I'm getting at is you're basically, in this bill, what's changing is that instead of four notices, one is sufficient. Is that what this bill does for you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burton, no. What this bill does for us is it opens another avenue for notification to the taxpayer. We can choose one of three: certified mail, return receipt requested, personal service, or publication in a local newspaper. The publication is cost prohibitive because it's four consecutive publications. What we're asking is to reduce that to one, and in conjunction with that one publication, at the time we publish, we would send out a first class notice as well. Just like with real property foreclosure, when we publish, we also send out a first class notice as well.
And do you publish?
Yes.
I guess what's worrying me here, Mr. Chair, if I could comment, is that clearly we haven't been sending four notices in the newspaper. So by reducing it to one, we're going to see more newspaper notices of people reading in the newspaper that they're about to or have been warranted to lose their homes in a bad economy. I'm kind of concerned that, you know, clearly with four publications, the cost is prohibited. We aren't using that vehicle. This will be a very popular vehicle with one notice, and it is almost a public shame thing, and I guess I'm less worried about businesses than I am the mobile home. I mean, there aren't a lot of things that are taxable under this, but it sure would be embarrassing or awful to find out about your home, losing your home in a public manner like this. And yes, in the past it was public, she said, but it was four notices, so who used it? It's too expensive. Also, newspapers, well, I'm just really bothered by this, I guess, this newspaper publication at all when you're including people's mobile homes.
Representative Grun. Well, it's along that line. You just look at the coming out of the Senate, there were quite a bit of opposition, and I wonder if you could sort of detail the general sentiment behind that opposition.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brune, I was very confused when I listened to the testimony because, and to kind of answer part of your question, you know, we don't have a choice. We're required by statute to collect these taxes in every manner that, because it does pay for schools, local services, and public safety. And I can tell you that I've been called in the last 30 years just about every name.
Yeah.
That's out there, and some of them aren't very nice. I have a wall of shame of all the little personal notes I've received. And it is difficult because we are dealing with people not only that are losing their manufactured homes or their business, but they're losing their home as well. And I think on the Senate side, I think there was a little confusion because when I was listening to the testimony from the senator, he was talking about taking cows and farms, and I wasn't really sure what that had to do with this bill. We don't have a choice when it comes to collecting these taxes. We are required by statute to collect them, and we are given certain tools to do so. And so we need to be a good steward of the statutes, and we have a heart. I mean, it's difficult in these times right now. And I have absolutely no clue on the Senate side what his issues were, because we haven't taxed cows in many years. And when it comes to foreclosing on real property, in my 30 years, I've never taken a home. I am actually, this year, I do have two houses that we will be taking. And it concerns me and it bothers me. But until we have some option to, you know, pick and choose the cases that we pursue. But as far as business personal property and manufactured homes, our option is to also go out and seize the property. We try not to do that as well. We want to work with the taxpayer as much as we can to try to collect these taxes. And I would pretty much guarantee that all 36 counties are going to do that, because our option, we're not in the real estate business. We want to collect the tax for the districts that the voters have said we want to pay for these services. But we also, under statute, you know, we don't have much latitude.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, was the opposition that you're referring to only on the Senate floor, or was there discussion in that vein in the, I assume it's the Senate Finance Committee? I can't remember what they call it. Finance and Revenue Committee.
No, Mr. Chair, Representative Brune, I was a little floored because it was unanimous
out of the committee.
Yeah. So when I was listening to the testimony, I couldn't quite understand how issuing warrants, what that had to do with taking somebody's farm and dairy farm and their cows in Klamath County. So I didn't know if they were making us be more like a debt collector, you know, a collection agency, because, you know, that's not the way we do business. So I was a little concerned. I confused. I can't answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm bothered by the notice, just like Representative Berger. I would be more than willing to raise the fee and continue the certified letter, because I think that's the way, my preferred way to see it happen, and it's what you're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, that's correct, Representative Riley.
So, is that working well? Is that working?
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, if I had an option on large personal property accounts, this really isn't an issue with manufactured homes as it is with personal property business. But unfortunately, because the returns come out in January and the bills come out in October, that's a lengthy period of time that businesses move and relocate. And if I had a warrant that came back undeliverable and it was a large sum of money, I would like to have an opportunity to publish that in the paper to see if I could locate that taxpayer.
After the certified letter came back.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, that's how I would use it, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess backtracking just a little bit here, you were talking about either, correct me if I'm wrong, either certified mail or the sheriff goes out.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. Or the tax collector can actually go out and serve it.
How often do you send the sheriff out?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can tell you that Clackamas County years ago used to do it all the time, but they had a very good working relationship with their sheriff's department. Nowadays, they don't have the time to do that, and I'm not sure that our service fee would be enough to cover that for what they charge for personal service. I can tell you that there are some counties that the tax collector will go out and knock on the door. I have never done that. I don't personally feel real safe sometimes doing that when you're going to somebody's house and knocking on a door and saying, by the way, here's a warrant and you owe us some money.
Follow-up?
Please, yeah.
Thank you. So is it your general sense that that is done very infrequently by the 36 counties? I'm hearkening back to the days when I was a deputy sheriff, and I unfortunately had to do civil service sometimes, and we didn't like that.
Yeah.
And so I noticed what I was serving. I don't think I served thousands. I don't think I ever served what you're talking about.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, probably not. My dad was a sheriff, and when I was the tax collector, worked in Yamhill County, we never had, we just didn't. It's not a function that they're going to put it on the bottom of the list, and timing is extremely important, especially if bankruptcy is involved or other liens by state agencies. So timing is a real big issue. And a lot of times on personal property businesses, what we find is when you're filing a judgment on these folks for delinquent taxes, the chances are they also have some problems with income taxes as well. And a lot of them are on the verge of bankruptcy, and so we need to get those judgments served as quickly as possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Call?
Actually, I'm okay. Thank you, Chair.
Can I have one
yes,
more
question? Yes, please. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
On the business personal property side, is it frequent, occasional, or that people skip? In other words, you notice them and they disappear in their assets and it's uncollectible? I mean, how do they even get away with that? I guess I'm back to this notice thing. It seems like a shame tactic, not a notice tactic.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, personal property, especially what I call the mom-and-pop shops, those are extremely difficult, especially in this economy. And because, as I said, they file their return, it's due by March 1st. The bills don't come out in October, and they're gone. And we do due diligence. We're still required to issue the warrant, and we do due diligence, but we do have the authority under 311, 740, or 720, I can't remember exactly, to deem that tax uncollectible, and we do take it to our county board to ask them to cancel the tax. If it's a tax bill that's $300 or $400, I'm going to do my best to try to locate those folks, but chances of finding them are pretty slim. If there's a bankruptcy involved, they are absolved or they're discharged of the personal debt, so our option for collection is to go after the equipment, and usually it's gone by then too. So, you know, there's just times when you're not going to get it, and you do have to go to the county board and ask to have them cancel that tax. But we also like to show to the county board that we have done due diligence and we have worked the account and tried to locate the people.
Yes, please.
So basically the newspaper notice serves you to show your board that you've tried.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that would be one option, yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Vance?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. The of course, what's of greatest interest to all of us is that some sort of notice be given to the folks involved, and it's been my experience that regular mail actually generally reaches people more frequently than certified, because folks generally don't pick those letters up. They do pick up the regular letters. But of interest to me, though, is the chance that you would actually publish instead of send out that letter, because even a single publication is fairly expensive. So I am curious where you would find a newspaper that would publish for as little as it costs to send a certified letter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vance, probably not. But like I say, what it does for us is it opens up another avenue to try to locate somebody with a substantial bill that has left the county. By publishing it in the paper after you've attempted to serve a warrant, maybe by certified mail, it gives us an option, if the county chooses so, to publish it in the paper to see if we can at least try to locate that business. Because if you've got a tax bill that's $20,000+ and they're nowhere to be found, that's an awful lot of money to go to the board and ask to cancel that tax. Because the districts, I mean, that's worked in their distribution schedule.
That's an excellent idea. Of interest to me is the fact that the notice applies to anyone that has an interest in the property, not necessarily just the person on the letter. It's any person having an interest in the property if you've given adequate notice to that, the person you think is the taxpayer. So to me, the publication notice is preferable because it's more likely you would actually reach a broader scope of people, maybe alert somebody to that fact.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, that's probably true. In personal property, it's the secured interest holder that we'd be looking for, and a lot of those are banks that are out of state, so they may not see that notice. But you'd be surprised if it's a business maybe that closed in March and how many employees come in and say, oh, yeah, well, here's where they are, and they took the equipment, and it's over here, and now they're in this county operating under this name. And so we will try to go after that business to pay those taxes. And you know, like I say, you know, I know you think I sound like a tax sucking hound, but until the statutes, you know, we can't compromise the interest. We can't, you know, we can't do anything we have to collect those funds, and so we try everything we can to collect those monies. And then if we can't, then we do go to the board. But when we go to the board, then at least we've let the board know that we did everything we could to try to collect those funds, because we are the collecting agents for all the districts.
Representative Broom? Thank you, Mr. Chair. A little bit different line of question. You talked about this briefly, but if I'm doing my math correctly, your fee increase on the warrant is 33%. Can you talk about when the last time that was raised, what that's going to? Is that covering the full cost? Is there a surplus at the end of that? Just give us a better feel for that fee.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, I think in my testimony, statewide, it's costing us about $18.53 to send a warrant by certified mail at this point. So, you know, there would be a little left over. Some counties, it's still not going to be enough. Other counties, it might be a little more. But to try to, you know, I don't want to say each county can determine what their fee is. Because also tied into this, just kind of as a footnote, with the affordable housing fee and the $15 increase in recording fees, these warrant fees have just increased substantially, because this is also under...
How have you been subsidizing it if it's at $18 now? How have you been subsidizing it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, because not everybody comes in and pays at once. If they did, I'd have a problem. I probably wouldn't have enough money. But when I send out probably about 1,400 warrants every year, and right now I still have about 2,300 that are outstanding. So my fund will sometimes get real close to zero, and then we'll send out another group of delinquent notices, and it'll come back up again. We encourage people to make payments on it. So it's kind of floating. So far, we haven't noticed anything, but if the fees keep going up, it is going to affect. Money would have to come from the general fund to pay for it.
And then just the last part of my question, how long has it been at $15?
since Chair Barnhart, Representative Bruin, since 1983.
Okay, thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm trying to figure out, and I'm trying to figure out what isn't working and if it is broken enough to do what we're talking about. So you send out the certified letters primarily now. Is that correct? Did I understand that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Okay. How effective or ineffective is that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's effective. Mm-hmm. Other than a lot of folks, when they see that certified mail, because they, what we call, they know the game, because it's typically the same people time and time again that get them. They don't sign for them, so they come back unclaimed. So to give us another avenue, like I explained before, especially with personal property, to give us another avenue to try to get that name out there to collect that tax, publication would be attractive. But we've never used it before because of it's too expensive to publish four consecutive times. And to say that if it isn't broke, don't fix it, I guess what we're trying to look for is we're always trying to look for ways, number one, to streamline our process, and number two, to give us more avenues to try to collect. And that's how we look at this.
Well, yeah, please.
I guess probably more of a comment than a question. And I appreciate what you do, and I'm glad you do what you do. My concern with the publication, is, as you've heard mentioned a couple times, is that it not be used as a first step. And that's my concern, if it's on an equal plane with these other methods of notice, I would like it to be more of a last step.
Mr. Chair,
leave that.
Yeah, Representative, I can pretty much guarantee you that that's what it's going to be, because with our budgets the way they are now, we're going to probably try to do things the most cost-effective way. But like I say, well, this is the best discussions I've had on personal property in years. You know, when you go to the County Board of Commissioners with a write-off list of over $300,000, I want to be able to justify them that I have done everything in my power to try to collect that tax. And if I can publish one time in the newspaper as a last alternative, I'm going to do that. I don't really foresee counties, when we discussed this in our organization and we talked about it, was a lot of the general comment, is that I don't think people are going to go right out there, because to create, just for the foreclosure list of the real property created, it's a lengthy process. By the time you produce all the documents, by the time you get it in conjunction with the paper, it does take a lot of time. Certified mail is a little easier in that at least you can generate your bill, but it takes time. I don't know how many of you have put certified mail together, but that's a lot of fun when you've got 800 documents that you got to stuff, seal, fill out the coupon, do this, do that. It takes an awful lot of work as well. But the publication, that's more of a, you know, I couldn't find them. They owe me $25,000. I need to put this in the paper to see if we can at least try to locate where the equipment is or where the taxpayer is. And that's what I see this method being used for. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gelser?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of following on with Representative Springer, and I think the first was a question partly for you and partly for the committee, whether we might consider amending the bill to make sure that publication did not happen until after there had been an unsuccessful contact attempted by certified mail. And following on to that, I agree, and that was my first response to reading this, was the concern about shaming individuals who are going through a hard time. I think we're all very sensitive to how particularly our small mom-and-pop businesses are faring in this economy, and I'm sure all of you are hearing from people in your communities every day that are going out of business and really struggling to keep their head above water. If I take that out and listen to what you're saying, I do have a significant concern about someone who would game the system at a time when our counties are also struggling, refuse to sign for a certified letter, and walk away from a $20,000 or $25,000 tax liability. And I think those are two wholly different scenarios. And I think what you're asking for is reasonable if we can ensure that it really is that second step when you can't find someone as that safeguard. And then the only other concern that I have is, given the economy today, the number of our newspapers that are folding, how useful this will actually be, because will there be a general circulation newspaper and available to most of the counties of the state?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Gelser. That's a concern. It isn't just with personal property. That's how we notify people for our judicial foreclosure on real property. And, yeah, that is a concern. You know, and perhaps in a session or so, we may be coming to you asking for some help as to how we're supposed to get our foreclosure published. It is a concern that, you know, like you say, the small mom and pop businesses, you know, this isn't one of the most gratifying jobs sometimes, but, you know, until something changes, you know, you folks have given us the duty or you've given us the rules of how we are to collect these taxes, and we're going to collect them to the best of our ability. And I don't know that anybody in our association would have a problem if you wanted to propose an amendment to say that this would be in conjunction with returned mail. I know there's been some discussion even on our real property foreclosure. If you have somebody that refuses to sign, or if the mail didn't go through, did you give them due service? I mean, due process? But on the other hand, these taxpayers they've gotten their November bill, they've gotten a notice that we're going to issue a warrant, and then we issue the warrant. Now, they could call us and talk to us about the account. We always encourage folks, we'll put you on a payment plan. We'll work every way we can with you according to statute and what statute allows us to do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Brune.
It was Representative Gelser's line of question.
That was answered, huh? Other questions? I have a couple.
Okay.
We've got in this 311633 a fee. How do you collect that?
Chair Barnhart, the fee is added to the warrant and it's recorded with the judgment. So when the payment comes in, it goes first to the fee. And then once the tax is paid, then we release the judgment.
Okay. And I guess I'm a little foggy about how you can actually proceed on collecting these taxes. Could you give us an abbreviated form of the list of the steps that you can take? And I'm particularly interested in what you can do if you can't prove actual notice. The certified letter is returned unclaimed, for example.
Chair Barnhart, when it comes to personal property and the collection of the tax, statute actually it's easier for us to collect than, let's say, a debt collector, mainly because once we issue that judgment or that warrant, it opens the door. The first thing I would typically do is a garnishment. I have the authority by statute, once I've issued that judgment, to go through the garnishment process, which is to try to locate a bank. If I can't, I might blanket four or five banks and have a certified copy of that warrant that goes with it. And when I get that warrant back unclaimed, it is attached to the document to show that it was unclaimed, but it's still deemed served, even if they chose not to claim it.
So legally, service is perfected,
right.
Whatever the term is, by the mailing of the certified letter and waiting a reasonable period of time.
Correct.
Okay.
So one of the options and what a lot
and after
of
that you can seize property.
We can seize it, we can garnish, we can notify the
Well, a garnishment is a seizure of property.
You're not
seizing the property, you're seizing different properties.
I'm seizing different properties,
right.
Correct. And when we issue that warrant, it also places a lien on any real property that they may own. And it also ends up as a blip on their credit report. So if they go to borrow money, it also brings that to the top, and that does have to be paid before a loan could go through.
Thank you. Does that generate any other questions, Representative Call?
Yeah, so let me just get this it seems to me that if you sent a notice by certified mail to someone who then refused to sign for it and you got the letter back, and you were why would your next step be to publish instead of just to assume that the person was out? I'm just trying to understand why you need any other step in the process if you're thinking that the person is there behind the door unwilling to sign for the letter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, if it's an account that's $1,000 or less, I'm probably going to look to see if I can find out if the corporation or the business is still active. I'm going to do some things within the office. If it's a large sum of money, like $20-some thousand, I'm going to send an appraiser out. Are they there? If they're not there, where'd they go? Where did the equipment go? So that would be when I would probably want to look at a publication to see if I could try to find or locate where the business went, where the equipment went, anything. And that's what a publication would do for us.
So I guess to follow on with Representative Gelser's thinking, but it seems to me that if it's more cost-effective to send a certified letter, significantly less expensive, and simply putting the letter in the mailbox certified is actual notice to the recipient. It seems to me that I don't know that we need to explicitly delve into making it a requirement to serve certified mail first, because it would be the responsible thing, simply, and probably the most efficient thing to do that tacitly. It would be understood that certified mail would be the thing you would do first.
Chair Barnhart, Representative, that's the counties are set up to do it that way. So that's what they're going to do. But like I say, you know, if you've got a large business,
right?
You know, I have a responsibility to the districts to try and locate those funds.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Gelser.
I think to follow on in this discussion, I would agree. I would anticipate that most, if not all, counties would go to the certified mail first. I think what I've heard on the panel is some discomfort, I think probably driven by the sensitivity that everyone has to the struggling businesses in their communities, and not to add on to their sorrow and trouble by unnecessarily shaming them or embarrassing them publicly. I think one of the things that's occurring to me right now, this is a very fascinating discussion, but I'm really glad that the legislature itself is not responsible for collecting taxes. If we were, I don't think we would ever get any.
Opposing them doesn't help us that much.
No.
Representative, that's what the executive branch is for the counties.
Correct. Thank you for indulging all of our questions.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Gelser, this has really been a good discussion. And, you know, personal property, I hate it. But, you know, it's there. We have to collect it. And, you know, we're going to do the best job we can for the districts getting it. But it's difficult. And it's because it is very personal. You know, it's a personal property manufactured home, where real property you go through 4 years, and within 4 years, you know, something comes together. But to give you, you know, 30 days or you issue a warrant, mm-hmm. you know, that's pretty immediate. And the same thing with businesses. You know, we shop, and, you know, my husband gets really tired of me. We'll be driving along. I'll say, ooh, they're in bankruptcy. Ooh, that business is in bankruptcy. Oh, they're going under. You know, yeah, it's, you know, they're very visible.
Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you'll indulge me, Ms. Belt, rarely in my four terms have I had one person sit in that chair and get grilled as much as you have today. And you have handled yourself with aplomb, and I really appreciate that you've been willing to sit here and honestly and without defensiveness engaged in a really informative meeting. Whether we agree or disagree on this, Bill, I'm very impressed with your ability to sit there and handle yourself. This is tough stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, you know, I've got 30 years of experience. I can tell you some really good stories. And unfortunately, you know, this is nothing compared to the questions that we have to answer and the things that we have to deal with the taxpayers, because personal property is a very contentious tax.
Yeah, thanks.
And I always put myself in their shoes, always. And it's difficult, but like I say, I work for the districts, and our job is to collect those funds. And until you give us a different way to do it, we're gonna do our best to collect it.
Thank you. Any other questions for this witness? Ms. Spicker, did you want to be heard on this bill? I saw that you moved up.
Oh, I don't care. Come on up. Join the party.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. I'm Annette Spickard, and you've seen me before as the Lane County Assessor, but I'm also the tax collector in Lane County and president of the Tax Collectors Association. And Diane always does an awesome job for us, so I'm not sure that I add too much to the technical discussion, but I did, in listening to your debate, was thinking about how our membership is feeling about this particular bill, and I believe that we would be open to amending it around the publication issue if that is an issue for you, and that would prevent us from moving forward with the bill. So if you have options that the chair would want to entertain, I'm sure we would be supportive.
Representative Riley?
Mr. Chair, I feel much like Representative Gelzer. However, I don't think I want to pursue an amendment. I'd like to just move this bill, and if we see that it's not working the way we want it to work, we can do something about that. But I personally think that it will work the way they're saying it will work, just because of economics and ease of doing what they do. It's not an easy job, no matter how you go, but they'll find the easiest and most efficient route, I'm sure. So I'm in favor of just moving this bill.
Thank you. Other questions for either of these witnesses? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on Senate Bill 395? I don't see anyone, so we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 395, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 394. colleagues, if you recall, an hour ago we we started with a bill that, if I recall correctly, raises a fee. No, I'm sorry, that's not correct. It changes the amount that you can ignore from $5 to $10 in a special case. Did you want to review that for us quickly?
Yes. What this bill does is when property taxes are collected in advance of extension to the tax roll, The property taxes that were collected more than by more than $10 will be refunded, and then the bill also stipulates that the tax collector cancel uncollected deficient property taxes of $10 or less in this case. So this bill takes effect on the 91st day after adjournment sine die.
Great. What's your pleasure? Representative Bailey?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 394 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bailey moves Senate Bill 394 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Is there any objection? Well, we're very quiet. Fine. With that, the bill will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Colleagues, is this a bill that needs to be debated, or can it go on a consent calendar? Representative Berger?
Mr. Chair, I don't want this on, if you'll indulge me. I'm willing to carry it if that's what it takes, but I think that this will raise questions significantly, and it certainly would with me. I don't want it on the consent calendar.
Okay. Great. We will not put it on the consent calendar. Anyone else want to volunteer to carry the bill today?
I'm happy to do that. Thank I mean, you. I know the cost of my objection, but I...
Well, it shouldn't be that, but it, apparently it is today.
Yeah,
I will start rotating those so that other people get to carry some bills, too. Well, with that, Representative Berger will carry, and we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 394 and open a work session on Senate Bill 395. The one we just had the long discussion about. What's your pleasure?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 395 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 395 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gelser.
I feel very comfortable moving this bill. I think it's important for our counties to have the tools that they need to collect taxes that are owed to pay for the services that people are counting on. I think that the intent and the concern of this committee were very clear, going out to the tax collectors across the state, that we would expect to see that notices aren't published until the taxpayer has been, at least there's been an attempt to contact the taxpayer by mail. And I just wanted to state that again for the record.
Thank you. Representative Call?
And I guess what I have come to appreciate about this is that I feel like we're giving more notice, that this isn't, since when you put the letter in the mail, that is actual notice, that doing this as a carry-on actually gives the person who owes taxes and has a judgment against them more notice in this context, which I think is a good thing. So I'm very supportive.
Thank you. Anything? Any other discussion on this bill? Is there any objection? Boy, after all that conversation, that's great. With no objection, the bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Riley, will you carry?
I'd be pleased to.
Thank you. Representative Riley will carry the bill, and with that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 395 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2474. Are you on that one, too? Yes, please.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, this bill is about reducing discounts on partial or full payment of property taxes made on or before November 15. Currently, there will be a 2% discount if two-thirds of property taxes are paid, and 3% if all taxes are paid. Now, what this bill does is it reduces discount on payment of property taxes made on or before November 15, first from 3% to 2% when all taxes are paid, and second, from 2% to 1% when two-thirds are paid. Currently written, this bill applies to property tax years beginning on or after July 1, 2008.
Okay. And are you on this one, too? Please come forward.
May not be so easy.
Well, if we could take this for another hour, then I don't have to go back to work and I can go home.
Good morning, Chair Barnhart, committee members. For the record, again, my name is Diane Belt, and I represent the Oregon Association of County Tax Collectors. We really don't have any issues with House Bill 2474, but would like to point out a couple of very needed amendments. The first one would be Section 8. If this does pass and goes into effect retroactive July 1 of 2008, that means that all the taxes we collected in November that received a 3% discount would have to be reversed, reapplied, and we'd be sending out a small balance due, which would make us very popular.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gelser.
I'm having a hard time following because I can't find a Section 8, and it could just be because it's 9 o'clock.
Section 3, I don't have my glasses on.
Okay,
pardon. See, when you're blind, 3 looks like an 8. It's all those years of looking at those personal property returns.
Let me back up just for a second.
Sure.
You assessed property in January.
Right.
For the tax year that begins the next July 1st.
The lien attaches on July 1. So we are currently collecting the 08-09 tax.
Okay. So the taxes due in November are for the year in which that November occurs.
The July 1st, correct. So okay. What this bill would do, Chair
This
Barnhart,
actually goes back a year. In
yeah,
fact,
it needs to say 2009. Please.
Yeah, right.
we were talking about that, and it's like, oh, I don't think that would be good at all.
No.
We wouldn't be very popular at all.
Fair enough.
Bad enough as it is, please don't make it.
Even less popular than you are today.
This bill might end up on the wall of shame.
Yeah.
Who wrote this bill?
And,
it's us.
That was just kind of like a little neon sign, and I thought, oh, dear.
And you had some other suggestions.
And then we have one more suggestion. In ORS 311-676, it deals with our senior deferral program, and it specifically states that the state of Oregon can take the 3% discount, and we would need to amend that to say 2% as well. Otherwise, we're not achieving consistency, which is always our goal. When Dave called, we did try to get a few numbers for you for discount, and it's kind of difficult for the counties to determine what was 2% and what was 3%. So those that could, we provided those numbers today, but the tax collectors really don't have a position other than we would like to see those two amendments go through.
Very good. Representative Berger.
Yes. How long has Oregon had this 3%? Is it forever, or do you have history here?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, a little bit. When I started in the 70s, it's always been 3%. I was thinking of the interest. We did a little research a few years ago, and the state of Oregon is one of a handful of states that even offer a discount. So to the best of my knowledge, the 3% has been here since we started collecting taxes, I think back in the 1800s.
Yeah, please.
Mr. Chair, and I presume, I don't go back to the 1800s, but I've been paying property taxes, it seems like, for a long time, and it's always been there. And when I first noticed it, I thought, is this in order to encourage people to pay up front and then provide the collecting agencies the interest that would be there if they're holding the money instead of you holding the money? Is that kind of the thinking of this, do you think?
Yeah, Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, they call it the carrot and the stick. The carrot is the 3% discount. If we were kind of having a little discussion before the hearing, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, your tax is $100. But it shows you can pay $97. But in order to get that $97, you have to do something, which is we have to receive it by the 15th of November in order to take advantage of that discount. So that's the carrot. The stick is the interest. So at the end of our collection cycle in November, and this has been pretty consistent for the last several years, statewide we're averaging 85% collection. And then by the end of the fiscal year, statewide, we're about 95% collection. So, and also, I probably should add that if you have an escrowed account, if you have a mortgage company, they're always going to pay in full because they're obligated to get the best deal. So probably about 40% of our payments that come in are mortgaged. Then you have a lot of folks that want to take advantage of the income tax deduction, so they're also going to pay it in full to take advantage of the discount or just actually that tax deduction.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
The mortgage, if they're mortgaged, they don't get the 3% if it's tacked onto their mortgage payment.
Oh,
or do they?
Oh yeah.
They do.
Oh, yeah. They Representative Berger, sure. When you make your payment every month into that escrow account, then we send the bill to the escrow company or they request the information. They pay and take advantage of the discount out of your funds. And then if you're short, they're going to send you a notice. If you're long, they're going to let you know that you have X amount of dollars left in your escrow. What do you want to do with it? But you get the advantage of that discount, yes.
And Mr. Chair, to repeat, 40% of taxpayers do that statewide?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, I think that's a pretty good estimate. Mm-hmm. And what we've noticed...
I'm sorry, 40% of what?
40% of our taxes that come in are typically going to come in through a mortgage company.
Ah, okay.
And I can tell you that in the last year, that has increased. What we've noticed is that there's a lot of lenders, one in particular, that keeps sending me pages and pages of requests, that if there is a deficiency or if they have not kept up on their taxes, they come in and they pay and they force an escrow. So we've noticed those escrowed accounts are increasing.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My line of questioning follows Representative Berger's. So just so I'm clear, the reason for the discount is so that the county has the dollars up front, so there's a value in that, as well as to presumably decrease some marginal decrease in costs of enforcement?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, you know, The money really isn't the county's. The county is the receptacle. We distribute it to the districts, and we keep a small portion of it according to our budget. Of course, the districts, they've gone quite a few months without receiving any tax dollars because our last payment is in May. Then we do send out the delinquent notices in June, so they get a little bit of blip. But for August and September, it's pretty lean. So they want to ensure that they're going to get a large influx of money right off the bat. So by having that discount, that encourages the early payment rather than spreading it out over three trimester payments. I mean, if you really wanted to look at it, if you did away with the discount and just had the trimesters, the districts would actually be getting more money. They'd just have to wait a little longer for it.
And to the second follow-up, Mr. Mm-hmm, to the second part of the question, are there enforcement benefits to the current system?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, I love real property because it is pretty much... You send a bill, you send a delinquent notice, you send a bill, you send a delinquent notice, and the fourth year it goes into foreclosure. It's pretty cut and dried. We don't have to go knock on doors. We don't garnish on real property. It's the taxes are in rem. They're against the property itself, not the person. So it's very structured as far as the collection. So basically what ends up happening after we collect that last third is the last 5% are typically folks that... They're in bankruptcy. They've had a catastrophic issue to their family, a death or a divorce, or, I mean, they just didn't have the funds to pay it. But they also have 4 years to get it paid. And the downside is they pay the interest, and the districts at this point get that interest.
Well, Mr. Yes, please. Yeah.
So I heard you say, I believe, that about 40% folks currently pay through their mortgage. Do you have a sense of what proportion... of the rest of the filers pay, take advantage of either discount?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, we collect 85% right off the bat, and I would say that probably the majority of that 85%, at least 70, have taken advantage of a discount because the bills for the trimesters are fairly, in our county, I send out almost 200,000 tax bills. The trimester bills are around 12,000. So the majority of folks pay and take advantage of the discount.
Well, Mr. Chair. Do you happen to have an estimate of, if we reduce the discount, how many people will shift to paying in the one-third installments because they are receiving less of a discount? And perhaps I heard you mention, and maybe this was not a legal reference, but you said that mortgage companies have an obligation to get the best deal. I would imagine that if the discount is lower and interest rates were higher, that a better deal might be had by keeping that money and not paying it all up front. So do you have an estimate of that shift?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, if I did, I probably would be at a casino somewhere right now or getting a lottery ticket. It's difficult for us to predict. But I would say at a 2% discount, I don't think we're going to see much of a shift, mainly because we have so many people that pay through their escrow, that pay through their mortgage company, and there's the majority of folks just want to pay for that income tax deduction. It's hard for us to try to guess what a taxpayer is going to do, and especially with the economy the way it is. Even if we did nothing with the discount, we could see a shift from people paying in full to paying by thirds. We didn't notice it this year. Collections are right where they have been for the last several years, but it's hard for us to predict. I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, please follow up. Yes.
My belief is that there's actually a fairly significant shift in the internal rate of return on whether you want to save that money or whether you want to spend it now. And I guess without an estimate of what that shift is going to be, my final question may be difficult to answer, but I guess I'll throw it out there anyway, perhaps rhetorically. Assuming a shift, magnitude unknown, is the delay in that revenue worth the increase in the revenue collected from the reduction of the discount?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bailey, let me see if I can answer what I think you asked. I think if all of a sudden people said, you know what, I just can't do this, I'm going to have to pay it by thirds, the districts would probably be better off if people did pay by thirds, even though they had to wait a little longer for it, because they're taking quite a large hit on that 3% discount. So if that was to go away and people paid by thirds, it would take a little while to adjust their budget, because I know when they budget, I'm pretty sure they budget for the loss of that 3% discount, and they also budget for some delinquent taxes coming in. But if the discount went away and people shifted from paying up front and it was more of a 33-33-33, the districts, I think, would probably be ahead of the game if they can stand not getting that. They'd have to rearrange their budgets, but they didn't take the hit of that 3%. So I does that answer your question?
It does, actually. Thank you.
And, of course, it may partly depend upon what the district can earn on the money that they've got in November that they don't have to spend until May or June.
Right, exactly.
And that depends, of course, on what the interest rates are during that part of the period. Representative Berger.
Yeah, I'd like to take another avenue to see if we can get at some of this. Surely you are a member of national organizations that track other states, and are we one of many that offer this kind of discount, unique in offering this kind of discount? And how does our collection rate compare to other states? Because all states have similar processes.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger, it's really kind of interesting when you start looking at other states and how they do their collections. I would say that it's been quite a few years since I remember going back and polling some of the states, but we're of a handful of states that offer discount. In a lot of states, and I think Nevada was one of them, they send you the bill, you got like 60 days to pay, and if you don't pay, they sell it on the courthouse steps. Some states offer two payments, like Washington. You make it in two payments, but there is no discount. So our 3% discount, though, from what I remember, is very comparative to what the ones that do offer a discount. It typically is right around 3%. But a lot of states have a process where the districts are their own collecting agent. They send their own bills. We are the collecting agent for all the districts, which works well because we put the money in the unsegregated tax account and distribute it according to their budget so that all districts are assured of getting a payment. Whereas if you were in a state where the school district sent out their own bill, if people didn't pay, you didn't get any money.
And Mr. Chair,
So
how are we in collections compared to other states?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Berger. Actually, I think we probably have a much better collection rate than most states do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gelser.
I think it would be interesting, the information about how other states do it, to overlay that with the tax structure of the other states and what they're depending on. So my home state of Nevada, for instance, the property tax, we were highly reliant on the property tax because they have no income tax that is there. For our state, the collection of the property taxes will still send income tax to our local school district. So I think it's not as easy as comparing who has the discounts, because how reliant different states are on that stream of revenue is very different.
Yeah, Chair Barnhart, Representative Gelser, that is true. You know, you've got sales tax. We were in Illinois, and they had if you worked in one county and lived in another, you paid some kind of a sales tax. You paid a tax on your boats, and you know, yeah, it just depends. You know, how much do they get on their vehicle registration, and does that go into their revenue stream? So, yeah, you'd almost have to look at the tax structure to see how it would all come together. That's correct.
I had a much higher tax on my slot machines in Nevada than tax in Oregon. That's a joke.
Thank you, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things. First of all, the S is silent in Illinois.
thank you.
Just make a noise.
Yeah, I grew up in Illinois, and we have that problem all over the country.
It's
so.
Like Oregon.
but my question or comment is that what you said is that our collection rate is probably much better than most states, and that tells me something, and that is we shouldn't maybe mess with it.
Well, Chair Barnhart, Representative Riley, you know, that I guess that's your policy decision. I told you what my personal feeling was. You know, that's something that you folks are going to have to struggle with, because I know the districts, you know, they're hurting. They are hurting for funds, and the discount is one place where they do take a hit. I think people in most states, they have taxes to pay, and I don't think people wake up in the morning and say, gee, I'm not going to pay my taxes. I think they pay them they can't pay them for specific reasons. And I think the other reason our state has such a good collection rate is because our laws are, I consider, generous to the taxpayer, because we do give them 4 years in which to pay. And in that period of time, either they come out of their problem, or they sell the property, or unfortunately now it looks like, you know, some folks are just walking away from it. But I think that's part of it. I think our laws are helpful to our taxpayers.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have noticed in talking with constituents that they are most aware of their property taxes, because it's such a transparent tax. You see where it goes. It's very clear. You know what you paid last year. You know what you pay this year, because it's very direct, and there's just one. Given that we have started the discussions about how to untie the hands of local governments and encourage them to use capacity that's still unused under their property tax rates, do you think if we reduced the discount that people got, we would undermine those counties at the ballot box where they're trying to do an actual increase in their property tax rate, because taxpayers would perceive that this is actually a tax increase, and so many are taking advantage of that discount?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Gelser, I think what this bill does, I mean, they're still getting a discount, which is maybe not the 3%, but 2%. And I think, you know, when people go to the polls and vote, you know, they are going to vote their pocketbook. And with the way things are right now, I really don't think it makes much difference if there was a discount or not. People either have a job and have the funds to pay and want to pay for the additional services and want to increase the services they get, or they can't afford to pay for them. I don't know that the discount really would tie into when somebody goes to the polls and vote, because to be honest with you, most people, when they get their tax bill, they look at the bottom line, what do I have to pay? They don't even know they got a discount. until they get a balance due because they were late, and then they call us, and then they know that they lost a discount.
Can I follow up?
Yes, please.
I think it's been my experience that taxpayers have very long memories for increases of any kind and very short memories for decreases in relief. So while it might be sure that it, I think it might be true that people don't appreciate the discount as they have it, but I think they would notice it when it went away. And I think an example in my local community, our local school district passed a local option tax, local option levy, and the voters happily passed it. And what the district could collect on it was far more than they anticipated. So they did a press release, and they did not collect to the full capacity. They actually, I think, went from $1.50 to 85 cents on that dollar. And then they went to go and enact that construction excise tax. Nobody could remember that relief of about 65 cents per thousand that had happened 9 months before. But this construction excise tax, everybody felt that was weighing heavily on them, even though most people wouldn't pay it. So I think we need to be very cautious about how we manipulate those tax bills if the goal really is to get resources into those local communities to see how the voters are going to perceive that and how they'll remember it.
Thank you. Representative Vance.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think anyone that's gone through a school district bond effort understands Representative Gelser's the truth of her remarks. My question is this. You alluded a couple of times to the good deal that we give folks that don't pay their real property taxes on time, and I haven't looked at the interest rates for a long time. Perhaps you can share with us the interest rates if you don't pay your taxes on time. What is that interest? And then I think the changes. Mm-hmm. And tell us about that change. Sure. And when that change occurs.
Sure. Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, we charge 16% interest. And the way it works is it's one and a... Yeah, well, let me tell you how it works. and then I'll tell you why it works. It's 1 1/3% each month as the third becomes past due. So at the end of the first year, it's 16%. At the end of the second year, it's 32%. At the end, so by the time we start foreclosure, it's in the 50% rate. However, there aren't a whole lot of places that you can go and borrow money and not make a payment for 4 years and not have anything bad happen except for the interest. And really, as far as the district is concerned, they levied that money, the voters approved those funds, and as somebody who pays in full and takes advantage of the discount, those that don't, the penalty is the interest, and that's what the districts get for the loss of their money.
Hold on, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
That's the stick.
Right. I had recalled it was 16%. And then when the foreclosure occurs, it shifts back down, if I recall correctly.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, when we issue, when we actually take the judgment, it's 16% up to the date of publication, and then it's 9% judgment interest on the judgment amount for 2 years.
Yes, Representative Bentz.
And thus, thank you, Mr. Chair, there's a built-in incentive not to foreclose for the 4 years because of the accrual of the interest, as long as you're sure the value is there in the house.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I don't have any choice. If it's delinquent, at the end of 4 years, it goes on the foreclosure list. Regardless of the value, if it's contaminated, it goes on the foreclosure list.
Thank you.
Wow. We could end up owing money.
Yes, we could. Well, no, actually, Chair, if there is contamination, I believe that the county is not, once we take deed to the property, the county is not responsible for that contamination. However, the person that would purchase it at an auction would be.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't even know that this is a question that you can answer today, but let's take a stab at it, maybe.
Sure.
I would like an idea, an estimate of how much revenue we're talking about, because quite frankly, we like our discount, our 3%, and we always pay that. In fact, I was sitting here thinking, when are taxes really due? Because we do that. So this could be pretty disconcerting for some. So what kind of revenue increase are we talking about? I know that's
actually
a really tough...
Yeah, Day actually has that information, I think.
Great.
Would you want to share it with us?
Yes.
You're off the hook. Yeah, I was going to tell you.
Yeah. Oh, do you know?
No, I don't. Yeah, I figured that
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Representative Springer,
I contacted the Department of Revenue and got the figure for tax year ending June 30, 2008. And the total tax bill was $4.5 billion. And discount taken advantage of was $110 million. So percent of discount out of all the taxes was 2.46%. So that's how much discount there was allowed.
So it's about $44 million would be the 1%, rough numbers.
Right, about $40 million or so.
The difference.
The difference, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have another question?
No.
Representative Call.
Thank you.
That was my question, but I'd also like to see a breakdown by county, if it's mm-hmm. possible. Mm-hmm. And if you could just give me Multnomah County right now, that would be fantastic. but no rush.
I do have
the
information.
I assumed you had it.
But large and small, the discount taken advantage of, it was about 2.5% overall. Just about almost uniform.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Almost the same all the way across the board.
Can I get a number of how much revenue would be generated for my county if we scaled back to this?
We're obviously not working the bill today. It's not scheduled for that. And, of course, if we were to pass it, it would require at least these two amendments that we've heard about. Mm-hmm. So I think that perhaps we could distribute that information to the committee. Mm-hmm. I'd probably just copy the documents you have would probably do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And was there something else on this end over here? Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your help on this fascinating bill. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2474? Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2474. Colleagues, I expect an interesting conversation tomorrow. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Oh, yeah.
Which I'm going to say.